This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Mind Muscle Project, welcome back to the after show. This week, it's going to sound like we're sitting in the same room, but surprise, we're not. We are in a lockdown again, unfortunately. And Raph, you actually copped isolation, which is unfortunate. You want to tell the good folks at home how you copped the isolation?
Well, it's actually my first experience. Like, I thought I was going to get through COVID completely unscathed. I'd never had a COVID test, never had to, obviously I had a lockdown, but I never had to isolate or any of that. So I thought I was pretty good. But yeah, we had a case at the daycare where my son goes. Like, I think a mum had it, and then I think a child had it. So obviously we don't have COVID. And my son doesn't have COVID, but part of the rules, I think I've got like 7 more days of us all staying at home. 1 more test we have to do, and then we can go free.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that we ended up in this position again. I don't want to talk about the whole show on this because obviously people are over-talking about it as we are over-talking about it as well. But I think it's just the reality of what happens when you get into a situation where you have the privilege of not having to worry about it. And so when the medicine comes, or the cure, the prevention, whatever you want to call it, comes, the vaccine, there's just no urgency, right? And it's like, you kind of laugh about it and you're like, oh, vaccine's going really slow. Whatever, like, we're good. Like, we weren't concerned. And now, you know, I'm talking to some people, like, you know, I was chatting to James Smith about, because he's back in the UK, and I was chatting, I was like, oh, what's it like over there? And he was just saying, you know, everyone's vaccinated. There's no deaths anymore. Yeah, the cases are going up because people are going out now, but there's no concern for it anymore. Because, like, I think 90% of people have their first shot and like 60% are fully vaccinated.
No, I think it's like 80% in the UK. What I heard was 80% are fully vaccinated.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe it's somewhere around that. But yeah, it's you know, and then it makes you think like, well, now are we going to fall behind? You know, they got ahead.
Do we are? We're crazy behind.
Well, no, but I mean, like, we were ahead in terms of like our economy. Opened up, but everyone's locked down. But now, is everyone going to surpass us because everyone gets vaccinated, and then very quickly they're going to move ahead of us because they have like no fear of the virus being an issue. So I don't know what will happen.
It reminds me of you know, when you go like camping, and then when you first going, you like don't care about supplies. You're like, oh yeah, cool man, like you can have that can of food, like whatever. And then like 2 days into camping, like you're willing to die for that.
I'm more shocked that you've actually been camping.
Yeah, dude. This is like on the Boy Scout shit when you're young, and I remember like you would get into it a few days in, and then you would put such a high price on like small amounts of food. So like someone would sell like a small can that was like, you know, $2 of canned food, and you'd sell it for like $40 because you couldn't buy anything else, and you were like 3 or 4 days before going home, so it just completely messed with people's perception of what's valuable.
How old were you?
Like 15.
See, I didn't have $40 when I was 15 as a kid.
That's because you didn't have canned food.
No, this is private school. This is private school money bartering for canned food on a Boy Scouts trip. Has anyone, like, you know, because I never did the Boy Scouts thing. I know it's like a private school boys thing. Is it a, like, when you did it, was it one of those things that people were like, oh, I can't believe I have to do this? Kind of like, if you're not religious, you have to go to church. If you're at a Catholic school, like, oh, you just go through the motions, but you don't like it. Or was everyone really enthused about?
Sort of. It was like, it was not compulsory. So everyone there had actually chosen to do it in this one. So people were, it was like anything, people were enthusiastic until they actually got there, and then 90% were not enthusiastic as soon as it actually got underway.
So how many people actually volunteered for it then?
I probably got about, in the youngest, probably got half the year would be like, put their hand up, maybe 40% of the year would do it. And then after they actually did one, you'd probably get about 10% of those that were willing to do it for a second time.
And the determining factor just being if your mates are doing it or not, or?
Yeah, like it was I mean, it sounds kind of good. You like don't have to go to class for a week. Right, and you're like out in the bush, and like you can do whatever you want. So like that is fun to it, but if you're not built to like live out there, you struggle.
And was anyone like exceptionally good at it?
I mean, this is like amongst reasonably all city boys, so not really. Definitely, you do find some people like really are just like, it's pretty natural for them. Like they can navigate, they get the compass, they're like into it, they're like making the fires and shit. Mm. Other people are just like working out where they can get Wi-Fi and. Fucking try to get the fuck home.
I could imagine you were particularly bad at being a boy.
I did get completely lost once, like in that grass that's like over your head. I think I was lost for maybe like.
You were so sure.
I think I was lost about 3 or 4 hours, which is a very long time when you're.
When you think you're lost.
Yeah, when you're genuinely lost. Luckily, I wasn't by myself. I had one more person with me when I was lost. Amanda was bad. We were just like walking, like just couldn't see anything, just in grass. Like just imagine just grass above your head. Walking and walking and walking, and then eventually after like 4 hours of walking, I was like bleeding everywhere. We heard a car, and then we just like found a road, and then we sat on the side of the road, just not moving until a car came past.
So was it like a sugarcane field? Is that what you got?
I think so. Yeah. Fuck. Why? I mean, you're asking the wrong person. Yeah. It was shit that was above my head. I couldn't see anything. You realize when you get out there, like you yell, but like nobody can hear you. Yell doesn't go anywhere when you're through. It's like it'd be like the ultimate podcast studio. Mm. It's like soundproofing all around you. And then that's when I knew I was not cut out for it.
Yeah, there's like this ad going around at the moment on billboards. Not that anyone in Sydney's looking at any billboards, but I think the company is Ampol. It's like a alternative. It's like a competitor to BP and
yeah, they're like taking over all the petrol stations here.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Anyway, so Ampol, they like one of their ads. I just assumed they were one of those independent chains that are like way out in the bush because their ad was like, I can't remember exactly, but it's a guy getting out of a four-wheel drive in the bush, and it's like helping you know, stay away from the furthest away from any living soul or something. Some play on words, which is like, basically, we're going to help you get out to the middle of nowhere by yourself. You know, the Aussie dream, escape into the bush and be the bush ranger by yourself. And yeah, anxiety. Like, not much gives me anxiety, but I look at that sign, I think about being out there and something going wrong. Like, I don't know, your fuel tank leaks or something, or if you get the water, it just takes one thing to go wrong out there and that's it. Like, you don't have the skills, you don't have the survival, you know, tactics or whatever. That's a done deal. Like, you are dead.
Did you ever hear the story of the people when Apple Maps was first launching and their apps weren't very good?
No, I've heard it.
You know how Apple Maps was competing with Google Maps? Like, initially they had Google Maps on, it was the only maps was Google Maps, and then they had a falling out. It's when Steve Jobs was still alive, and then Apple Maps came out with their own maps to compete with Google Maps. Right. And the competition is still going. But in the early days, like, Google Maps was way ahead of Apple Maps. It's still ahead, but it was like way ahead. And Apple Maps had brought out their maps. And I think a couple was in Australia, they're like American, and they were trying to get to, I think they were trying to get to like Uluru, some like major landmark out in the desert. And anyway, the maps just took them like completely the wrong way, right? In any way the direction they wanted to go. And they ended up like suing Apple because they ended up like in the desert, out of fuel, nowhere near anyone. And they got rescued by a helicopter like 9 hours into dehydration.
Wait, how did the helicopter find them? Just by chance? Or they put out an emergency.
Yeah, I don't know. They were sending out like SOSs and shit. And a helicopter came and found them, airlifted them. They were literally just like, you know, Australia's got crazy desert, right? They were just driving like to the middle of nowhere. Like one of those paths where you could just be driving into the middle of Australia. No one around. And they sued Apple over it.
I don't know what it is about. I'm getting anxiety talking about it now, but there's just something that's just so unsettling to me being that far away from any form of like urban civilization. Like, I don't mind going somewhere which is quiet and remote, but I like having cell phone signal. I like having, you know, at least somewhere I could at least walk to in a day, you know, that it's like, all right, cool. If I had to get on my feet and walk, I could get there in 10 hours, like no matter what. But there's just something unsettling, like, going completely off the grid like that, which just, I don't know. Do you get that? Is it just like a city thing that you grew up with? Is it, I don't know.
It's very unsettling. It's why when I was on those scout camps, it was so easy to scare people. Right. Like, the whole camp was just like people getting scared, like ambushes and shit like that. Because you're so easily scared when there's nobody around.
Yeah. And it's just a feeling that if you think about the total time you spent in your life that far away from people, it's not much. Like, I'm kind of always being around people, and you know, I know you've been in Grenada, so that I guess that's a little bit, you know, less urban. But most of the countries that I've traveled to in the world, I guess Vietnam's probably the least urban I went to in some parts of it. But man, I guess I've always been around like densely populated cities. You know, I guess even Perth is like a little bit empty, I find. Like, by not obviously all of Perth, like this CBD, but you know, you drive out of there for a while and you think, fuck, there's not many people around here. So, and I guess it's one of those things, those effects that you get so used to your environment, and then when you're taken out of it, it's like very unsettling.
Yeah, either way, you know, when it's like too many people, you're not used to it, it's unsettling. And then when there's less people than your norm, you're unsettled as well.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, I've been to New Zealand, I've driven through New Zealand, and that's got a pretty low population. So there are like long stretches of road, but you don't feel, you're kind of in between towns, so you don't feel that lost. But it's like when you're really far away and there's like no roads, like no proper roads and stuff like that. That just doesn't, that doesn't feel safe.
No, it's not. It's 100% not for me.
Well, that's probably why we get along. So finally took you up on the marathon program that you had very generously put into my True Coach for me. So I've been using the marathon program, started the first day on the program. Now it's got like, just so kind of people understand this marathon program. So I'm training for the Melbourne Marathon in November. And it's, I think it's a 16-week program. I haven't done the exact maths, but I'm gonna fall roughly, which is what?
Yeah, so four 3-week cycles with a 1-week deload in between, basically.
Yeah. So that's like July, August, September. So it's pretty bang on.
Yep.
Pretty close. So I'll be pretty much ready at that point. Now, I have a couple questions. So I ended up using his zone calculator because how it reads, just for you guys listening at home, it's like zone one, 5 minutes, for example. And then it goes zone two, 20 minutes. Zone one, 5 minutes. So you're essentially doing a 5-minute block, a 20-minute block, a 5-minute block. So a 30-minute continuous run, just the different tempos. And what I didn't realize was so you put in a tempo calculator. The longest distance I had that I had timed was a 10K, which I ran pretty fast. I ran at probably 8.5 to 9 RPE, and that was like 47 minutes. And so I used that time I put in, because there's heaps of different ways you can create the calculation. He goes, you know, what's your best 5K, your best 10K, or your threshold pace, or your marathon, or whatever, to create your zones. And I put in my my 10K, and it spat out the times, which felt pretty correct. But I went off. I didn't realize that each zone wasn't an exact run pace. It was like a window.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, 6:30 to 7:30. You know. But I only looked at the fastest pace. I was like, I don't know what that really big number is. I think this is the pace here. You just got to hold that pace, because that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, cool. Zone one, like run this pace. Zone two, run this pace. Not zone one, run in this pace window. That's what I didn't realize. And so I went out there and I couldn't run the paces. They were too slow. So I just didn't realize. I guess I'm asking you, like, one, is my Apple Watch wrong? That's like entirely possible. But I feel like it can't be that wrong. Or two, is it just the program starting so, so slow? Like, is it for absolute beginners that for someone that has already put in a decent amount of running, it's going to feel like particularly slow in the beginning, and then by the end it'll be like, oh, okay, I know why we started this slow, because now it's like 2 hours at this pace, and that's actually like a pretty decent amount of time.
Yeah, it's the latter. So idea, you know, we had that podcast with Mike Fitzgerald. It's his program. Matt Fitzgerald. Yeah, what I learned from it is, yeah, because you just generally go out, you're like, oh, I'm gonna run for 20 minutes. I'll just run like a good 20 minute pace, and that therein lies the problem. Is because you're always just running at this like similar sort of like 20, 45 minute pace, which generally, you know, it's going to be too fast, and then very rarely do you push higher speeds. So there's tons of slow running. So the pace you were running, you know, the pace you were running that will be the same pace you're running when you're running for 3 hours. And then all of a sudden you'll be like, oh, this is a pretty hard pace now. You know, this is a hard session. So he's accumulating like more time at that lower speed running where you feel good. And that's what like sets you up, I think, and avoids injuries, and just like stops you like always threshold running.
Yeah, but the thing is, right? Like I went out and I was in zone, so I fucked it up. I already read it wrong. So I did the 5 minutes of zone one, which is basically like your walk.
Yeah, it's a warm up. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I did zone two, but it was supposed to be 10 minutes. I accidentally did 20 minutes for some reason. I just read it wrong.
Yeah.
So it fucked up day one of the program. But zone two, right? The threshold was like five. The fastest you could go in zone two is like 5:37. I think there was something wrong with my watch. I couldn't run 5:37. I felt like I was going really slow, like very slow. Like I almost had to change my. I feel like it's a different running technique at that speed. And my thing was saying like 5 minutes, like at the pace.
No, no, it's not. It's not that slow. I think something might be wrong there. It's not that slow. Because you're only going like 30, 40 seconds slower than when you were running hard for a 10K.
So there's something wrong with my watch.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Because I feel like I'm running really slow. I'm like, okay, no. I mean, I'm not... It just feels really slow. Maybe it's my perception of how
fast. Might be your perception. I think you always do run pretty fast. I mean, it's a pace you should be able to run 2-3 hours at.
I mean, definitely felt like it. But then again, I don't know. But I did feel like I was going... Like I was conversational pace. I was like letting heaps of really shit runners run past me. I'm like looking down at my thing and it's still saying 5 minutes, like 5:01, 5:02. I'm like, oh, I just don't, this doesn't feel like 5:02. This is just too, I'm not that good at running. You know, it's not like a 5 minute pace is just, because 5 minute pace is decent. Like it's decent amount of work. It didn't feel like that. I think it's something I have to watch. So I don't know, maybe anyone listening, do you guys get issues with the Apple Watch pacing in terms of the Apple's own in-house app? I think it potentially is. I might take my phone and then run with my phone and see if it's like a different, if I get a different speed. But then again, how do you know, right? How do you compare how you feel on different days? It's like, oh, I'm perceiving this run as the same as yesterday, but it could very well be just, you know, the same, you know, faster or slower. I don't know. Maybe I need to borrow your watch.
You borrow the watch, yeah. An easy way you could do it as well is just do a, like, when you got your longer run, do a lap and see what pace you run. Do like a, do actually run 4 kilometers. See how long it takes at the pace. Yeah. And then you'll know for sure.
Yeah. Well, track the right amount of time and the right amount of distance. So.
Well, then it has to be right.
Yeah.
Because it's an equation based off time and distance.
I was doing some reading on it though, and it was like Apple's GPS isn't super accurate. So what it will do, it'll smooth out the run pace. So like I was watching it at the end, and I was like, all right, I'm going to go to a walking pace now. And I was watching it, and it took a while for the pace to catch up with.
Yeah.
A while, I mean like 2 minutes, you know, like I was walking for a while, and walking is slow. Walking is like 11, 12 minutes per kilometer. And it took a good 2 minutes to show that on the watch.
Yeah, it's because there's a difference. Like a lot of the, if you like an expensive watch that puts a lot of battery power into it, it will take your GPS like every second or less than a second. Whereas there's other GPSs that will, you know, to save battery life and whatever, they'll like take your GPS landmark like every 15 seconds.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
So it's like a lot slower seeing differences in pace.
Yeah, I think that's, I definitely think that's what was happening.
It gets, to be honest, like it gets pretty intuitive. You start to just know, oh, this is my pace here.
Yeah, I was thinking that. But I also don't want to be deceived in thinking that I'm fast when I'm not. And then on the day, you run at the pace that you've been training at and you end up with a shit time. And you're like, fuck, I thought I was running at the pace the whole time. You know, so that's why I'm a little bit worried. I just want to make sure it's right. But anyway, that's how the marathon's program's going so far. No injuries, touch wood so far, but...
You've done one session though.
Well, I can get injured off one run session. It has been... It has happened before. But no, I'm feeling good. Like I changed my running technique, running more on my toes, more upright, like more with more extension in my knees than before, and it's feeling heaps better.
Do you feel like the knees over toes stuff you did prepared you for the running?
I definitely think at the point I started knees over toes was the first lockdown actually last year in March, and that was when my knees were the worst because I'd just come off a season of basketball, and I like just an air squat was causing me a lot of pain. And it took me out of that and gave me a lot of range and strength and stuff. And then running has been my plyometric reintroduction. And so far, it's had its ups and downs. But I think the biggest change has been changing my running technique.
To get more on the balls of your feet?
Yeah, and I think it also just is more like I run faster more easily. Like I've got a more open hip. I'm more at the end of... It's harder on my calves because my calves aren't as strong because they're not used to it. But once they adapt, it's definitely a more efficient running style. Definitely.
Yeah, no, it makes a crazy difference. For me, I was locked up, so I was like obviously going crazy. Didn't realize how hard it was going to be. I always heard people being locked up for the isolation. I was like, oh, I actually would enjoy that. Turns out I don't, and I was fucking hating it. So I'm not meant to see anybody, so I was like, okay, I'm going to slightly bend the rules here, and I'm just going to go up and down the fire escape. Try to think of it like a... I was like, oh, like what's heaps of stairs? I'll just do that. So I set myself the goal of doing 2,100 stairs, like 21:15:9. That was my thinking.
Did you go into Google and say, what is heaps of stairs?
No, actually, I did. I was looking it up. I was like, oh, I wish I could go like a kilometer up into the air. Like, that would be sick. And I looked that up. That's actually really, really far, going up a kilometer into the skies. So this was about like 500 meters from what I could find. And then I just like settled. I was like, oh, this to me looks like heaps of stairs. So I settled on 2,100 stairs. It was a lot. Because you have to also go down. Because, you know, I'm not like, this is not an endless fucking staircase. Like, I have to go, I have to continually go down. So, I like went up 2,100 stairs and I went down 2,100 stairs.
How many, like from top to bottom, how many steps is it?
100 and it's 14 floors of 15. Oh, it's 210.
Okay. So, 10 sets.
Yeah, 10 sets is how long it took.
How many? Yeah, so 5 floors. Yeah, was it good? Was it a good workout?
It was good. It took me like over 40 minutes. It's just the only problem is the right side of my body is incredibly sore because I'm always turning one way up this whole thing, and my left side of my body is fine.
Oh, is it a winding staircase?
Yeah, it's a winding staircase. So like one side of my body just pushing off is like cripplingly sore, and the other side is like fine.
This is what has to happen. Okay, so interesting stuff happened in the financial world related to the fitness industry. And I think what is so interesting about this conversation that we're about to start is it's just proof to me that the pandemic, if anything, has expanded and grown the fitness industry. Like if you think about some of the industries that have really benefited from, like obviously gyms shut down, so on a micro level it was really bad, but I think as a whole the industry grew because people's demand, I guess I didn't really believe it, right? Because you're so focused in on what we're doing that sometimes you don't get an opportunity to zoom out and look at the industry as a whole. But I think the industry is growing, like, which is really positive. And I think two massive indications of that this week, our friends at FitStop, Peter Hull, he took a massive investment from a multinational to grow and expand FitStop. Some of the other companies that they invest in, this private equity firm, is Snap Fitness and Nine Rounds, or 12 Rounds or something, which, you know, honestly, I think they're both pretty shit franchises. But I was thinking about it, I'm like, look, maybe this private equity company is like helping them turn around, or maybe they're just like learning the lessons and FitStop's going to benefit from that. It's like, hey, we've had two franchises, like it's been really tough. We're like doing our best to turn them around. We've learned heaps of lessons. FitStop comes along as the third franchise fitness investment. They're going to benefit from all the mistakes or all the troubles that this private equity firm has had growing these other two franchises. I'm pretty sure it's 12 Rounds Boxing because that sucks. That's not going very well. I know that for a fact. But I still think it's a good move. Pete's a smart guy. He wouldn't have, you know, got himself in this situation if they weren't the right people. But I think what it showed me was people like FitStop, because, you know, coming from our position, it's very easy to say, having been in the industry so long, oh, it's just some other variation of an F45, I guess. And so it's like, oh, how much room is there for more people like this? And then obviously private equity people, they analyze these things. How much more room is there to invest in a company like this to take over market share or expand on the current market? And that investment just tells me there's heaps of room. There's way more room for, you know, different companies and new brands and people doing things well to expand. So I don't think anyone should be disheartened at all by, you know, the fact that F45 is everywhere. I think there's still plenty of room for other people in the market to come in and do really well, and loads of other franchises to come in. So I think that was very encouraging. I'll get your thoughts on that before I move to the next financial investment that got made.
Yeah, well, I think that they always say it's like somewhere between 5% and 15% of the population have a gym membership. So yeah. There's the room for more people to get gym memberships is like still massive.
Yeah. And I just think also the fitness enthusiast crowd is growing, but they want something new. You know, like they've had something for a while and they're like, okay, I'm ready for something else. Because nothing lasts forever, right?
Yeah.
So you either, you know, that's why F45 is doing the Pilates thing, because they're trying to like expand and be different and change their offer. Because there's only so many F45 classes you can do before you want to move on to something else, right?
So, yeah, I mean, it goes for everything. It's the same as CrossFit. You know, you just can't do that same CrossFit routine, I think, for most people forever.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, it's really good. You know, I learned a bunch of stuff. Now I'm pretty keen on something else. Everything's got a life to it.
Yeah. Which is why I think just, you know, have a really good think about before you start the next group fitness franchise what it is that you're offering, because you've got it's a very competitive market. It's very saturated now. And yeah, people will just churn through. So like, how is that altitude thing going? I know we haven't spoke about it in a while, but
I don't know. I haven't really seen anything about it.
I haven't seen anything from it. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, the market will let you know if you're doing well and people want it, they'll make more. But you know, if it's a bit gimmicky and it's not doing that well, they won't. So, and it's harder than what people think. So the next financial investment as well was actually a company called, I'm pretty sure they're an Australian company, called Wimta Warrior. Now, if you don't know anything about Wimta Warrior, basically it's kind of like, won't be the best comparison. I guess it's kind of like The Biggest Loser in some ways, but you start out, you're like really out of shape. I mean, there's another one called Corporate Fighter. Maybe people know that as well. But the point is, it's like, all right, you go from out of shape, depressed, hate your life, to 6 months full transformation in a cage for your first MMA fight. It's really like an exercise program disguised as like preparing for your first MMA fight. That's a really good idea. It's like a great lead gen and new client acquisition tool for combat sports gyms. So it's like it's really good from that perspective. And I think it's really empowering. It's like giving people a lot of like purpose, and it's kind of like the people that run their first marathon, right? They go from basically doing nothing to like achieving a massive goal. Obviously, just stepping into a cage just takes way more balls than running your first marathon, you know? And I mean, I've been to some of these Winter Warrior events. Like some people, unfortunately, like they've got combat sport experience. And so you are running the risk of being one of these athletes and going in there, learning everything for the first time, but going up against someone who's kind of maybe told the gym that they don't have much experience, but they have experience and they're just out of shape. So now you're going in there with someone who like maybe did like 15 years of karate when they were a kid, or like had a stint in Thailand for 2 years and did Muay Thai, but they just haven't done anything for like 10 years. And so it takes balls is what I'm saying, because it is risky. You're going in there and someone can, especially when you're a bit heavier, someone go there and like do some serious damage to you. So anyway, Conor McGregor invested a significant amount of money. I don't know the amount of money. It might be on the financial review, but...
But it's his trainer, right, who's doing it?
No, so I think when how it works is like with Winter Warrior, you just put the program in your gym. And so Conor McGregor's trainer is like putting that program in his gym. Yeah. So they're like getting into all the major gyms in America and, you know, the rest of the world as well. So it's like, oh, look, you know, this really famous gym, American Kickboxing Academy, AKA, that we all know has produced, you know, a world of champions, they've got the Winter Warrior program at their gym. So it's like, yeah, it's just gaining traction that way and gaining credibility and notoriety that way by association with those brands. But Conor has actually put money in himself.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, to grow it. Because one of our friends, one of our clients, our first client in the gym, that offer came across his table as well a few months ago, but he turned it down. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. Whoever's advising Conor, he's got some good investments. He's invested in DraftKings, you know, DraftKings, the betting app. He owns a big chunk of that.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a really good betting app. Anyway, so like half the brands that are on the UFC Octagon, the stickers, like Conor has a piece of them. So he's done extremely well. But yeah, that just shows the market for that sort of stuff is expanding, right? Combat sports, fitness programs, like it's all growing.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing we talked about, right? Just more things. You can be like, you know what? I want to give this a go. And like someone's probably going to do Winter Warrior. I guess you like do it. You like lose some weight. You get fit. You do a fight. But you're probably not going to keep doing fighting forever.
No. I would be interested as well to see what the next step is for Apple and home fitness. Because I've done a little bit of looking into that the last few days. And it looks like it's going really well. But we'll see.
Yeah. I think it's gone huge.
Yeah. We'll see. Okay. Anyway, that's all good stuff really at this point for the fitness industry. So I think, yeah, if anything, now is the time to jump in if you haven't yet. Guys, we're going to get into some listener questions. Before we get into the listener questions today, one of the most important things you can do for yourself in lockdown, if you are in lockdown listening to this, doesn't matter, is just drink quality supplements, eat quality supplements. Well, the best thing I like about supplements is I think it gives you more buy-in to whatever exercise program you're doing. So we're working with a lot of new clients these days. And I like recommending supplements because, one, I think it's just really good to get quality stuff because people always want to get supplements. But two, I think it just the mentality helps you buy in, like, okay, I'm training, I'm taking supplements. And so you're just more bought into whatever you're doing. So I do really like it from that perspective. And you guys know our favorite brand is True Protein. So make sure you go check them out, themymuscleproject.com/trueprotein. And I think the end of financial year sale is over, which was like a pretty massive sale they were doing at the moment. But regardless, go on there, check it out. We've always got the 10% off code.
Yeah, supplements are pretty much, when you're in isolation, the main thing I look forward to in a day. It's like my escape.
Pretty grim. It's pretty grim.
Okay, first question we have is, it's actually a gym question. Jappy Johnson, he's asking, why aren't there 24/7 functional fitness and CrossFit gyms? Obviously, these gyms are centered around group training model set class times with like regular times throughout the day. But specifically for shift workers, there's nothing like it for him. He recently quit his CrossFit box after going for 2 years because with young kids and shift work, he just can't make the times work. Have you got any thoughts on whether this would work? Has it already been done and I've missed it? Is there a gap in the market for this $1 million idea?
Yeah, it's been done. Yeah, it's been done a few times. There's a few CrossFit gyms that have just gone 24 hours. And then there's obviously a few like just 24-hour gyms that have just added a CrossFit section. So it's definitely available. I think it's a stretch to obviously have a class at that time, you know, like a 10 p.m. class or like a 2 a.m. class. That's probably not going to happen. But in terms of access to that equipment in that area, yeah, there's loads of gyms that have it now. I don't know where you are, so I can't recommend one, but I would just go check out a lot of 24-hour gyms. They should have the equipment there. And then for CrossFit boxes, it's probably worth, not all of them do it. A lot of them don't, but some definitely do.
Yeah, I think there's just also some types of training that have been proven over time to go well by yourself. So if you want to go to bodybuilding training, it's like proven over time that people can motivate, enjoy doing that stuff by themselves. I think generally like hard CrossFit training is very challenging. People to go in the gym at random times and just do by themselves. I don't know if you've really seen this, but I've just like never consistently walked in and seen a gym where like everyone's doing really hard workouts randomly by themselves and like motivated to do that. It's just not a thing. People like, I just like need a training partner or a group or something for people to join me and do this.
Yeah, and I think also one of the main benefits of CrossFit gyms is the community, right? So basically get rid of that when you go 24/7. I mean, you'll have the regular class times, but yeah, people are rocking up to the gym, you know, at weird hours by themselves. Like there's no community there and there's not a lot of value. So I would recommend finding the 24/7 spot with a functional fitness area. I think that'd probably be better.
Yeah, that's the best. Okay, Ash, she's looking into our program for some consistency. She is in Canada and she's still in lockdown and has some access to some very limited amounts of gym equipment. Can you give me some more info on what I can expect in the programs and what kinds of equipment I can have or you should get to be successful with home workouts?
We don't have, I would not recommend body fitness.
No, you need heaps of equipment. Strong.
Yeah, I would not buy any of those unless you've got a like, full-on home gym. But if you've got minimal stuff like a kettlebell, dumbbell, like some weight plates or something, we have a home workout. We have the dumbbell 30-day dumbbell workout you can do as well. The mymuscleproject.com/programs is where you can find that. So that's like our at-home workout. The thing was, right, we didn't invest heavily in at-home workouts because we got out of lockdown so quickly. Mm. So we didn't invest as heavily as some of the other brands and stuff out there, especially a lot of the American companies, because obviously it was like, there was a big demand for it. But yeah, that's our at-home workout program, which a lot of people have done. I know Melbourne went in, they went to their second lockdown. A lot of people did it and, you know, we got some really good feedback on it. So you can check it out there. Again, our website, themymuscleproject.com/programs. Just look at it now.
Yeah, what I'll add is last night I was like trying to work out how I could do natural hamstring raises at home. Finally found a good way to do it and I posted it. So basically go to your couch and you just put a pillow between your ankle and the bottom of the couch. So you go, like, you put your ankles underneath the couch and you just have somebody sit on top of the couch. And natural hamstring raises actually work perfectly for it.
Yeah, so we've got the, or what we've called it is, we've got a two. We've got the male dumbbell 8-week program or the female dumbbell 8-week program. And we just split them up because it's just different body part focuses. But yeah, all you need is a dumbbell for that workout.
Yeah, nothing is more versatile than the dumbbell.
No, so good. Yeah, cool.
Okay. Next question is, she is starting an online training program as a business, and I don't think there's a good answer to this, but she's wanting to do programming for clients and workouts, and she also wants a good way to build nutrition plans for clients that they can see. Are there any apps or softwares that create this, basically this duo?
Is this person got a name?
Training with Abby. I don't know if that's, Abby. Hopefully that's her name.
Okay, so she wants a nutrition and coaching app combined.
Yeah.
It sounds like. Well, you've got, TrueCoach can do both. You can put nutrition stuff in TrueCoach. It just depends on what functionality you want from your nutrition. So I did a pretty deep dive into some nutrition coaching apps. I used Equilution. I used RP Diet. I used Carbon, Lane Norton's app, obviously MyFitnessPal, and one or two others. And they're very in-depth. So like even the most simple ones, there's still a lot to learn to be able to use it. So I feel like nutrition just depends where you're at with it. I feel like it does need its own app in many ways to be able to do it properly and to see some results. Whereas I guess if you're coaching someone and you're doing a lot of the heavy lifting there in terms of their nutrition plan, and you just maybe need a place to put the prescription in and a place to hold them accountable to it. Maybe just write some simple notes. TrueCoach has some pretty good functionality there. Like people can just write some comments on the nutrition stuff. But it's not that in depth. TrueCoach is a coaching app, right? So it allows you to input your coaching tools, your exercise tools, and then add nutrition on top of it. That's what we've used. That's gone pretty well. But yeah, I don't think there's like a perfect app that combines both unless you've used something like that, Raf.
Nah, it's like, it's too hard. I generally think it's like, it's too hard almost to do both, because nutrition is so different to training in terms of the type of coaching that you need. And then we talked about it last time. I was looking at some since. I don't think really any app has nailed the online nutrition coaching part of it.
Yeah, I think nutrition coaching is very difficult. It's very complex. Like now that we're back in the trenches a bit with some clients, I think one thing that you have to consider about nutrition coaching that you realize only once you start doing it for a lot of people is that the way you prescribe nutrition protocols for someone is vastly different based off people's personality types.
Mm.
Some people, you can write the most difficult thing, like a 75 hard style nutrition program, and they nail it. They do everything perfect and they get incredible results. And if that was like your only five clients, you would have no idea what to do when you come to a client that's like half alcoholic and like is addicted and an emotional eater. And that person needs a very different app and a very different prescription and a very different plan and timeline to someone that's like, hey, I'm ready to like do whatever it takes. And I've been a pro athlete before and I know what, you know, measured meals and everything, I can do all that, you know? So that's why I think when I'm looking at these nutrition apps, I'm almost like, oh, this is a perfect app for this type of person. And this is a perfect app for this type of person. And this is a perfect app for this type of person. So it's hard. Nutrition apps are really hard because, yes, they just don't suit every personality type. Obviously, a great coach can help all clients. And so I guess having a flexible app that allows you to coach better is almost like the best solution in many ways. It's tough. It is tough.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about it as well is that because all the different ways can work for different people, and it's just not quite the same as it is for training. Whereas training, like everyone needs to really do the sets and reps. Programs don't change that much depending on the person. Whereas like, yeah, nutrition, the actual way you prescribe it is like completely different for most people.
Yeah, like you might not realize that, you know, someone's home life is the reason that they can't make nutritional changes. You know, they've got someone that cook some really unhealthy food and they put all kinds of like tempting food in the cupboards and stuff, and like no nutrition app is ever going to be able to know that, right? If that your spouse is like coming home with like seven boxes of cookies and pizza and chocolate, and like every time you finish is opening up a bag of chips, like it's not going to know that. It's not going to be able to account for that. It's not going to be able to create a coaching tool based off that problem. It's not going to be like, all right, cool, this is the conversation you need to have with your spouse. Like here's sentence one, here's sentence two, they're going to respond this way, here's alternate sentences. Like, no, that comes through a coaching relationship, right? And a conversation with that coach and that client and potentially that spouse. So it is very nuanced, nutrition. It's hard to put it all into an app, for sure.
Mm. And we got one more follow-up question on nutrition. This is from Dennis. I've just started calorie counting for the first time. How do you count calories when you're eating out? So if I'm eating out once or twice a week, is there a point in counting those calories or should I just estimate them?
That is a good question. And it's tough because there's so much, you don't get every ingredient, which I think is always a tough part about eating out. And so generally what I do is I try and find a similar meal to something that you would cook at home. And I generally add on about 30% of the calories that are in a restaurant. So for example, if you got like a beef burger with chips, if you made like a beef burger with chips at home, let's just call it like 500 calories, I would call it 650 calories when you eat out. If it looks like all the same ingredients, obviously portion size is like a huge factor that comes into it. But yeah, if you like take a My Muscle Chef meal, right, which is pretty bland in many ways, I got a little bit of stuff in there, but you look at that and you go and look at the same size chicken, potato and vegetables at a restaurant, and the My Muscle Chef says, and My Muscle Chef, for people who don't know, it's like a pre-made meal, like made fresh and then sealed and sent to you, just heat it up in a microwave box. If that's 500 calories, yeah, same thing. I'm going to think it's 650 when I eat out, if not more. So generally my rule is add on 30% of like a similar home cooked meal.
Yeah, that is an easy way to do it. So you just counter in the app and add on 30% of the calories.
Yeah. I think 30 is like average, but you could easily go a lot higher. Like some, I know one place I used to eat breakfast at, like they used to deep fry their bacon in oil. I was like, oh, how's this bacon so delicious? Like it's crunchy all the way through. And they go, oh yeah, because we deep fried in olive oil. So they cook bacon how you normally cook bacon, and then they deep fry in olive oil as if it didn't have enough fat in it already. So yeah, there's your 50%.
Yeah. Well, one thing I used to talk about with clients that would eat out a lot is just that the incentives game for a restaurant is like all stacked against you, because it doesn't really matter to them how your nutrition goes long term. Like if you gain weight or not, it's not a big deal. But how good the meal tastes is like the determining factor of whether you ever come back to that restaurant or not. So they have all their incentives to add calories to meals, add fat to meals, and make it taste really good. And they have like no incentive to genuinely try and make it healthier for you.
That's very true. I never thought about it like that, but yes, that is very true.
All right, that's it.
Cool. All right, so before we jump into the review today, so actually, obviously, in lockdown, got a little bit more time to watch some things. But you guys, I just wanted to let everyone know, obviously, that the most amazing quality gear on planet Earth right now, RecGen, actually, they ship worldwide. So if you guys are listening to this, I think it's time to upgrade your gym kit into the RecGen stuff. Every single time we wear it, we get a comment on it. I'm looking at you now, Raf. You've got the white Oxy tee on with the locker imprint, which looks really good. It's just like a really lightweight, breathable shirt, which we love. And you can sweat in it. You can train hard in it. And like it never stinks. It's got like the antimicrobial silver lining in it. It's like made up of four different materials. They're just killing it. Like it's just an amazing brand. So guys, make sure you check out the RecGen apparel at themymuscleproject.com/recgen. And actually, one thing before I forget, if you guys buy a program in July with us, so any of the programs, especially any of those at-home programs as well, if you're stuck in a lockdown, you go into the chance to win a free Whoop band and a one-month Whoop membership as well. So all you have to do is buy a program to enter, and everyone who purchases in July will put you guys into a draw, and then we'll just basically shuffle and pick one person to win a free Whoop and a month membership of Whoop. So make sure that you do that. Okay, so the movie I'm going to review today, I actually don't think I watched it on Netflix now that I recall. I think it was on Amazon Prime is where I watched it. Yeah, I do think it was Amazon Prime. Now, many, many years ago, actually, I might find the exact date of this. There was a movie that came out called The Invisible Man. And yeah, I think there's been a few variations of it since. I want to get... Yeah, 1933. No, I don't think I watched that one. That's probably a bit old. But I feel like there's been a few iterations of The Invisible Man, and I've watched a few of them. But there was one recently that came out last year. And, man, it's... Or maybe I did watch the really old one. Anyway, it's a horror movie. And I don't normally watch horror movies, but one of my clients was absolutely adamant that I watch the new one. And he's, man, I think to his credit, it was a fantastic film. Unexpected. I watched the first one and I was like, it's kind of a bit gimmicky, a bit lame, a guy that's invisible, this, that. You don't really give it much credit. You kind of look at the title and the cover art, and you're like, nah, not for me. I get it. But man, it was actually awesome. They did such a good job with it.
Yeah, I just can't do horror movies.
Because you're too scared?
Yeah, they just scare me. Basically, they just scare me. I'm like, I just don't want to be scared. So I'm not gonna pay or invest time in being scared.
Oh, Hollow Man. That's the one. That's what I watched. Hollow Man. That was with Kevin Bacon.
Ah, yeah. I actually saw a part of Hollow Man. But the most recent one you're reviewing now is The Invisible Man.
Yeah, look, it's not that scary for a horror film. Like, if you're scared... Like, I was scared by the Saw movies. Like, almost...
Yeah, they were fucking terrifying.
Yeah, I would not even put it close. If it's, like, on a scale of, like, one to Saw, it's, like, a one. So, it's not... Yeah, it's not very freaky. And on a scale of, like, jumpiness, on a scale of, like, one to Paranormal Activity... Did you watch Paranormal Activity?
Yeah, that was terrifying.
It's, like, a one.
See, maybe this is why I'm scared. Because even though I say this, I end up watching heaps of them.
I reckon it's worth a watch. It's definitely worth a watch. Great acting, like, good plot... The film's like not super jumpy, done really well. I think it's when you go into a film and you think, okay, I know exactly how this is going to go, like pretty much, and they're able to find some ways to make you get a little bit surprised on what could ultimately be a pretty predictable film, I think they do a pretty good job. So I give them credit there. So it's great. Yeah, it's a really good film.
Yeah, I actually give a second review here. I started watching, it's actually on Netflix, and it was number one in Australia. There's a movie with Kevin Hart called Fatherhood. Similar to me, so he actually just becomes a father in the movie. It doesn't spoil anything. Basically, the plot of the movie, as soon as he becomes a father, the mum dies almost straight away, right? And
what does she die from? Childbirth?
Basically, straight after she gives birth to the child, she gets like some, like a blood clot in her lungs. I think that is made up like the most stereotypical way to die. They're like, oh, just like a blood clot in the lungs, like she's dead.
She might have just took the AstraZeneca virus.
she got a COVID vaccine in the movie. She died instantly. And then he becomes a father. It's a very grim way to start a comedy. I'm about halfway through the movie. Despite that, it's actually really funny. I actually would really recommend it. I mean, I already think Kevin Hart is funny, so I'm kind of laughing before he even says anything in the movie. You know, you like see a comedian, you're just like already laughing.
Yeah, just his face isn't.
Yeah, it's like literally nothing to laugh at the beginning, and I was already laughing. It's pretty solid for a lockdown. Yeah. It's something I would do.
Yeah, so I'm giving Invisible Man 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm going to give this... I can't give it more than 3. So, 3 out of 5. It's pretty much just if you like watching Kevin Hart or not. And I think it's like a Netflix original. It's got like pretty high ratings. And I think it's only on Netflix.
Don't waste time with Fatherhood. Go watch Invisible Man. It's worthwhile. Absolutely worthwhile. And thank you to my client who recommended that. That's good. Well, hopefully you guys enjoyed that. We can get in person next. You know, screen's a little bit weird, but, you know, we always find ways to adapt. It's not the first time we've done this, but guys, we appreciate you tuning in. Remember, if you buy one of our programs now, we've got the dumbbell programs, super handy in lockdown, mymuscleproject.com/programs. You will go into the draw if you buy it in July just anyone that buys it now, I reckon from now on, just because we are in a lockdown, we'll put you into a draw to, win a free month of Whoop. So exciting stuff, guys. As always, we appreciate you tuning in. Thank you so much, and we'll speak to you all next week.
Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.